Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast, brought to you in association with First Bus. I'm Connor Southwell, joined by Paddy Davitt and Sam Seaman to, I think, record a podcast that it feels like over the last 3 or 4 years or so we've done on a few occasions. We've made the trip back up the hill after Norwich City's 5-3 defeat to Portsmouth, their biggest Carrow Road defeat outside of the Premier League since that 7-1 defeat in 2009 to Colchester United. And a scoreline, really, that probably doesn't reflect the margin between the teams. And post-match, Paddy, you spoke to Norwich City head coach Yannis Ovtorup. He spoke about his players being unmotivated. He said Portsmouth had better desire. Given the fact that all 11 of those players are contracted to Norwich City beyond the summer, how concerning is that statement?
Well, I mean, the first words, more or less, were question the desire and the motivation. And as I said to him, well, that's a damning indictment for me. Set aside the technical and the tactical and the quality elements of what he's got in the group. But if you're questioning the motivation and the desire, it's doesn't scream to me that the culture is particularly healthy there at the moment. And we're not on the inside. We don't see it day in, day out. We don't, get that access. But what we've seen this afternoon, on top of now 2 wins in 13, would tell you that there is some serious squad work ahead going into the summer. We knew that anyway. The messaging has been quite clear. They expect a fairly healthy turnover. I'm not sure... that the scale of turnover required to turn this group, and it won't be this group moving forward, obviously, but into, by their own measure, next season needs to be justifiably in the top six conversation. Either in the top six or certainly at this stage of next season, really in the shake-up. And to go from this, which we've witnessed again today, to that seems fanciful at the moment. So, yeah, but honing back in on those particular accusations towards his players, and then he went on to elaborate that over the next few days he has to almost look every player in the eye, I'm paraphrasing, and see do they have the motivation to show what they're all about, personal pride over these last three games. And if I'm an Norwich fan, I'm pretty disgusted by that, really.
And to be fair, Sam, that's how it looked. I mean, sometimes it's easy and it can be thrown out as a statement, I think, to answer kind of sometimes footballing problems and sometimes other problems. And look, there are plenty of footballing problems. We're going to talk about a lot of them over the next hour or so. And particularly when you're this close to a full-time whistle, it can be reactionary and it can be emotional. And it's easy to point at a group of players and say, they don't care, they gave up, they don't have desire, they're not motivated. Yeah. But it wasn't just Norwich City fans. When your head coach is saying that, it's a major problem. And, I think we could probably all think of 5-6 players. I'm not going to name them because people know who we're talking about. And they're not here to defend themselves. I'm sure they would argue that they do very much care. But you can only go on what we see on a Saturday, as Paddy says. And the evidence today was players not tracking back, players walking, players not willing to defend, not willing to get into shape, not doing the basics, not making themselves available. Some of them hiding, I felt, at points during that game. It's a big concern, and it's scathing criticism from fans. But when it comes from your head coach, it's, as Paddy said, it's just not acceptable.
Yeah, absolutely. And as much as you won't hear a head coach make those criticisms too often, I think it's probably fair to say that we don't, you know, lurch for trying harder or work ethic too often. And, you know, I think, as you say, it's quite a reactionary thing to often chuck out there when it is basically just footballing reasons, people not being technically good enough or the tactics being wrong. But I think when everyone starts to say it, and it's not just a thing that's getting shouted from, you know, the stands at particularly emotional times when people are frustrated, that's probably when it's true. And I mean there's no excuse for it, really, mainly because the number of people who were there who have paid very good money to watch that team play. And I think that's one thing that probably does get to fans, is the fact that, you know, we can talk about these bigger motivations and players who are out of contract or who are looking for a move in the summer, some of those who even are expecting to stay at Norwich and just want to fight for a starting berth next season. But ultimately, aside from that more logical thinking, you would imagine that a more emotional, I don't want to say more human, but, you know, I think people will know what I'm getting at, that type of reaction would kick in when you're there in front of, you know, 25,000 people and they're all desperate to see you perform better than you did. So I think when performances do genuinely come down to a lack of fight or motivation or pride or work ethic, that is a really big problem, because there is that hugely immediate motivating factor of those people who have paid to come and watch you play right there. And, you know, I think most of the criticism they've received has been fair. And obviously there are footballing reasons for this as well. It's not just purely, you know, not working hard enough. I think there were footballing mistakes made, probably tactical issues with the way that Norwich played. And to be fair to Portsmouth, I thought they looked pretty good, particularly some of their individuals looked very good. But for me, when such a big portion of the problems that Norwich had today comes from just a failure to do the required running, then that doesn't bode very well. And of course, the positive to that, and you know, if you want to put it in those terms, is that it feels unlikely that type of performance carries on beyond the next three games. But when the next league game that Norwich will play after those three games is 4 months away or something like that now, it's probably easy for us to say, oh, well, you know, those problems are nearly dealt with. There are still three games that I think these Norwich fans will feel more like they're having to get through than looking forward to at the moment. And, I didn't think today's performance in any sense helped that.
Yeah, it feels like it's an endurance test, doesn't it, at the moment, rather than something to enjoy. And that point, Paddy, about the playing group, and as I said, we are going to come on to the footballing reasons and maybe the deficiencies of the coaching and all those elements. But they've come against the Portsmouth team who won twice on the road all season before this, lost 12 of 13 on the road prior to this. They came to Carrow Road, scored five, and probably could have got seven or eight if they really wanted.
Well, that was more or less what their manager, John Messino, suggested after the game. I mean, he called it one of their best performances, but how compliant was the opposition today? And for me, what we've seen today, we've seen too often that whoever the 11 are in yellow and green on the pitch this season in the Championship, in the face of adversity, they just fold collectively, individually. There's something in their psyche that is, and this is the thing that Torrop himself hasn't alluded to, and more than that, has actually put it out there, that this ability to resist and to dig in, which are maybe more intangible elements in a player's makeup, but there's clearly deficiencies, because at 1-1, when they've got themselves back into it, Fisher has an excellent chance and heads it straight at the keeper from point-blank range. But they're very much in that game, and then just to do what they did at the back end of that first half, and again, Portsmouth goals stamped with things that Norwich players collectively, individually, the structure was so wrong. Then to go in at 3-1 down and then, you know, very short order thereafter, you're 4-1 down. It's just against the team, as you say, with those metrics, which are pretty diabolical, really. And to be able to turn up at Carrow Road and score five goals when you've lost 12 out of 13 is, well, the numbers speak for themselves. So, Yeah, which all leans into finding players who can, when the heat's on, can withstand what's been through. And not just the odd game, because we can all go back to the... I mean, I go back as far as Derby away, which was a 3-2 away win in the end. But that night, that day, early in the second half, Derby equalised, and then it was, you know, backs against the wall. And as a collective, as individuals, they withstood that, came through it, and then Sainz and Sargent did what they did at that part of the season, which would be very, very potent. And that's fine if you can go to Derby and do that on a one-off, but too often it's gone the other way, and it's when they've faced adversity, they've simply been unable to resist. And today they're not playing, as the table would tell you, as those stats would tell you, they're not playing one of the best sides in the division by any stretch of the imagination. So that in itself is more troubling, that you know, a team who maybe had a little bit more motivation than Norwich, in the sense that they probably need another win or two to secure their safety. But to be that poor, when you've got yourself back in the game as well, it's not like they were found, you know, about 1-2 down inside 10 minutes and then they're just on the back foot. They've actually got themselves back in that game, thanks to Josh Sargent. So it all flows for me back to Torup's accusations, for want of a better word, which is that too many in this group don't have what's required, setting aside the football, the technical capabilities, to come together as a unit to be anything other than mid-table cannon fodder, which is what they are at the minute.
And what it does, Sam, what today does, and a performance like today and comments like that, it should, you would hope, really bring into view with clarity those players maybe who aren't part of what comes next, of what happens next. But on the same token of that, he's got the same group of players for the next three games. And if they are going to perform like they did today, those sort of, I guess, grumbles and moans and feelings that are beginning just on the dial have just been notched up a little bit by that performance and that result today, that's only going to intensify.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting set of choices he has to make, because I think there are some players in there who maybe you would say don't particularly line up with the longer term philosophy or the players who you expect to be key next season, but you know will definitely come in and will absolutely work their socks off to do everything they can to win. I think Jack Stacey was a good example today. Obviously he's got another year on his contract, so it's not a certain situation that it's going to be a goodbye this summer, but as somebody who maybe hasn't benefited, if we're being honest, from this sort of new longer term project and doesn't really fit into it going forward, he was still, you could tell from his performance today, absolutely desperate to make as big an impact as he possibly could. I think you can see that from his personality whenever you speak to him. It's probably a good sign of that. The community award that he's picked up from the AFL as well. And obviously he goes and scores a goal today, scored a goal in the last game as well. And I think he's a good example of the fact that Torup probably can still put a team out over these next three games that isn't necessarily an exact 11 that it's going to be next season, but still is full of players who will put in a better performance, put in a bit more effort than, say, effort is an easy word to use, but, you know, will show that desire maybe that there wasn't in that first half. So I think that's where the blend is probably needed. I think there was a bit of a shift towards that from the sorts of substitutions and the changes that Torup made. It felt a bit like that with Kenny McLean going into midfield, because it was almost that sense of, yes, it means having to play right-footed Kellen Fisher at left-back, and it means playing Jack Stacey when I'm sure, well, it's obvious that Torup trusts Fisher a bit more to play his style of play in that position, but it felt like a statement to say, OK, enough is enough, put the solid hard worker Kenny McLean in the middle of the pitch, get him more involved. Bring Jack Stacey on to bring that work ethic. So I think in the short term, it's not necessarily a case of just pick 11 players who are definitely going to be in and around the starting lineup next season. I think from the way that Torup spoke, it's a mix of that and also which players in the here and now are going to give everything to at least show these fans that they care and that they appreciate them turning up to the games and spending their money on coming to watch them. So I think there is a bit of a balance there, but I thought the first half particularly was was probably evidence for whoever's been saying, you know, there's a large portion of fans who've been saying, you know, start McConville in games, give him more time, give Oscar Schwartau more time. And by the way, I would put him very firmly in the bracket of players who gave everything to try and try and get a result today. So I think it's today was evidence for people who want to see more of that. And maybe, I mean, we'll have to see which way Torup tips for Millwall. But yeah, you've got to say now that it's just got to be about which players are going to give everything. And I think probably Norwich fans, after what they saw today, would rather see a team that works their socks off and comes up short technically or tactically than a team that doesn't really look particularly interested in showing those fans how much they care.
Yeah, and to an extent, Paddy, some of this is, and I know you put this to Yannis post-match, some of this is human nature. There will be guys in that dressing room who are thinking about what's next, because either the club are going to make a decision on them or they have to make a decision for themselves. That's football, that's the way it works. We saw last summer how brutal it can be when a player decides they want to go and how much it can shift things. That is the case at the majority of Championship clubs at the moment. I know Paul Heckenbottom did a bit pre-game where he was speaking about how he needs, you know, how his group of players needs to find motivation from within to finish the season strong, and how that speaks a lot about individual qualities and perhaps he'll make judgments on players based off what they show in the next few games. It's concerning that it's quite so drastic at Norwich City. I mean, this isn't a Norwich team on the beach. It would be good if they were on the beach under umbrellas. They'd be performing a lot better than they are in the moment and have done over the last three games. They might as well be on the moon, some of them. It's a concern that it's so drastic at the moment. How easily diagnosable it is that, you know, we can point at three or four players and go, he looks disinterested, he looks like his mind's elsewhere, he's not tracking back. That's a problem, because it's not one that other clubs are having at the moment, even with that sort of human mitigation.
Well, I mean, obviously without, you know, a more forensic analysis of those, I mean, there must be those themes. Certainly the clubs who are in Norwich's position now, I think, with not materially a lot to play for. So I'm not sure in terms of the parallels with the rest of the division. But, you know, I look at Josh Sargent, and he's gone off today because he's a towering near post defensive header, and he's landed in a really awkward spot. Torup said he's damaged his shoulder, and obviously further assessment required. Now there's a guy who, and I know he, you know, did those quotes over the international period, and maybe the full context didn't come out. You subsequently spoke to him, and he reiterated, as he had done in that interview, I think it was in The Guardian when he was away with the US, that he is happy here, but he will have a career decision to make. He doesn't need to make any apologies, because every time he goes on the park, that is a player who potentially won't be here this coming summer. He will move on. But nobody's questioning his desire and his attitude, his work rate, his application. So I think it does come down in many respects to the individual, because the other ones are in similar, potentially, situations, either of their choosing or because Norwich are going to maybe make a decision that, you know, they're not for them moving forward. There should be at heart, a personal pride and a drive from within, as an individual that you'd like to see. And so for me, it's on those individuals, but it's also now increasingly on Torup. And I thought, you know, today post-match, he more or less alluded to that, you know, that, yeah, he's pretty much decided, I think, which ones are focused and will put their shoulder to the wheel, to use that phrase, and which ones are, you know, maybe thinking, well, I'm not here next season, and so why do I need to go through the charade of actually looking like I'm that interested? And he needs to weed them out quickly, as you said, over the next day or two, and put them to the side, and, you know, nail his colours to the mast to the players who he feels, both in this three-game period and then maybe more moving into the summer and beyond, are going to be part of it. Because I think the time has clearly come when you're 2 wins out of 13 and your fan base increasingly getting frustrated. I mean, when you've got booing at full-time, half-time, you've got ironic cheers when George Long comes and catches a ball in the second half. That is not, as I put in my point, that's not a soundtrack that either Torup or Napa need to have going into what is a massively crucial summer for the strategy, the broader strategy and the broader direction of travel. So the sooner that there can be a visible turning of the wheel, we said on the walk back up the hill now, for me, it's McConville in, it's Fisher in, it's Wright staying in, maybe even a Miles getting fast-tracked back in. You know, that very visibly at Millwall and Borough and Cardiff at Carr Road would signal, this is us going in the direction we've pledged we're going to go. And it might, in terms of the here and now, not produce results, but you can't get a poorer performance or a poorer result than today. You can't get.
Bet.
No, I don't think you can. I don't, because if you lose in that fashion with those younger players in, then okay, you say, well, we're not happy to lose, of course, but you can see that we're exposing young players, and young players we believe in that in the mid to longer term can drive us forward as a club. And I think your fan base, the majority of them, would accept that. They cannot accept, I'm sure, seeing performances with players who've been tried and trusted and are palpably not up to the job. And so if that is the case, then the sooner there can be a turn of the wheel, the better for all concerned, I think, because it's now increasingly Torapa will be getting the heat, and with him it will be Napa, and that's only going to intensify if the final three games of this season follow the same pattern of the last 13, really, because the fan base have been sold a vision that things are going to change and that they're going to go in a more bold direction, and at the minute they're not seeing it, not enough evidence anyway, and again that was a point I put to Torapa after the game, and he talked about almost you've got the positive side of the ledger, which there was, and nobody disputes that. You know, over the entirety of this season, there have been positive elements, lots of them. As he listed them, you know, the goals they've scored, which stand in comparison with pretty much every other team bar Leeds in the division. So, you know, chance creation, some of the games where they have played that version of Hofball, which excites and gets fans off their seats. But there's also been increasingly too much being stacked up in the debit column for me and him as well. So, you know, at the minute, it feels a bit of a fork in the road with this project. And, you know, anything in the interim that could tip it more towards a positive scale is pretty urgent, I would have said, because what will happen is if they limp into the summer in the remaining three games, irrespective of what the window brings, he will be in very short order under pressure to perform much better than they have done and get them, you know, in a upward curve, as it were, in terms of results and positions in the table within very short order at the start of next season. That's inevitable. So he will know that. Napa will know that. And that's why it matters. Millwall matters, Borough matters, Cardiff matters, and then the summer ahead matters as well.
Yeah, it's about credit in the bank, isn't it, for next year, or what's left of it anyway, because it certainly feels like they've eroded some of that over the last few games. And Sam, that probably brings us on to Torapa, I guess, because I can almost hear people watching and listening and saying you've done 21 minutes and you've spoken about the players and where maybe they're not at, and you haven't spoken about the head coach and a coaching team who, you know, since the opening day at Oxford, we could highlight defensive deficiencies again today, conceding five at home against the team with the stats that are listed off earlier, that there is, for as much as we talk about those kind of desire points and motivation points, there are footballing points as well, and that does ultimately fall with Johannes Hofftorp and his coaching team.
Yeah, I think over the course of the season he's made plenty of decisions that I don't understand, and I do still think it's too early to decide whether he's going to be a success at Norwich. I think probably all of us would agree on that, and I don't think there's that much evidence to go on. You know, as he said, we focused a lot on the players in these first 20 minutes, but I think that was probably due given the amount of analysis that we've done, that other people have done, the amount of opinion there's been about Torup and the project and Ben Napa and this whole bigger picture without really focusing on individual performances. And I think probably today rests more with the players than with him, to be honest. And I can imagine a lot of people disagree with me, but I think
I can hear the comments now. Furious time.
Yeah, exactly. But
thank you for those, by the way. That wasn't a negative.
Yeah, comment all you like. It's I don't mind. Yeah, it's just I think it probably is too early for us to tell, and that's not to defend some of the decisions that Torup has made. I think we've called out individual times when, you know, he's used certain players, he's gone with a completely different tactic, he's gone away from the identity in that way, like he did against Burnley, for example, last week. And I think there are definitely ways that he can improve. He's only been a head coach for, what is it now, two and a half years, something like that. So he's learning on the job, you know, as much as other people. I think I've made the point before that we talk about Oscar Schwartau and how inexperienced he is as a player. I think Torup's been a head coach for a similar amount of time to what he's been a professional player. So, yeah, he's definitely still learning on the job, and he definitely could have got a lot of things. He could have done a lot more to prevent ultimately what happened today. The main concern for me, and I think probably the only real piece of evidence we have in terms of what it will look like next season, whether he's the man to take Norwich forward, is the regression that there's been over the season. And we're not just talking about, you know, a final day Sheffield Wednesday situation like there was in that Daniel Farke first season. It's been quite a steady, reliable downward curve from September, October, when it seemed the project had peaked and Norwich had... I mean, if the progression had continued to go up that level, they'd probably be secure in the playoffs along with Sunderland at this point in the season. But it's the fact that since then, it's been a real downward curve. And I suppose there will be certain people who would defend it by saying, well, if you flip the two halves of the season, then, you know, the mood would be much more positive. But ultimately, that's kind of the whole point. You know, isn't it the point of a transition season that it starts off really badly? It starts off almost like how it has in the last few weeks, and then improves to a point where you see these performances like we were seeing in October and September. So although I don't think it's enough evidence for us to decide whether Torup's going to be a success at Norwich, it's certainly not enough evidence for me for Ben Napper to sack him and almost restart the project again. I think it is just a little niggling concern for me in terms of why would that be happening if this project was headed in the right direction and if it was going well. And it is just a minor thing, as I said, but I think that's the concern for a lot of people, is that they don't see it getting better. You know, if they had peaked at this point in the season and they were eighth, everyone would go, okay, well, you follow this trajectory and before long they're good enough to be sixth or, you know, fifth or sixth. But it's the fact that they've actually regressed over a long period of time, and not just because people have sort of downed tools because of a lack of motivation at this stage in the season. So, yeah, I think that's the main concern for me when it comes to Torup.
Yeah, I mean, let me put that point to you, Paddy, because there are a lot of fans, along with Sam, saying that point, that, you know, the regression, the backward step that it's taken. We've spoken defensively about where they're at and where they've been all season. They made mistakes against Oxford. They're still making mistakes, 43 games in, shipping goals at an alarming rate. There will be people out there watching this, listening this, who aren't convinced by Hannes Hoftorp or his coaching team or his methods or the direction of travel that they're heading in. What do you make, I guess, of that and where we're at with it? Is it too early, as Sam said? Because I think those concerns are increasing, and you can feel it amongst the fan base, and probably understandably so, based on the run of form that we've seen so far.
Yeah, and it's not he's in the sense of a victim of what he'd already produced, but people know that he has put teams on the park this season who have cohesively looked like a real exciting brand of football that can get results as well as performances, and multiple examples of that. We all can tick off the games that we're thinking about there. So I think now they are rightly questioning, why did that head coach and pretty much the same set of players produce against, you know, the Watford and Hull games at home, the Plymouth home game, the Luton home game, even the draws at home against Sheffield United and Leeds, where, as they've went on to show, they are the automatic promotion benchmarks in this division, along with Burnley. And on those particular afternoons at Carr Road, you felt, while no manner of means perfect and lots of work ahead, that they were on the right path and that they were competitive. And it is a puzzle, and it isn't acceptable. I don't think it is enough to just seek solace in the mitigation of the injuries and the fitness management issues as to why post sort of Watford away. That was February the 1st, February the 2nd. They won 1-0 at Vicarage Road, 2 points out of the top six. And then subsequently from that point, they've just fallen off a proverbial cliff. So why? Because they had injuries prior to. We know the situation with unavailable. Sargent himself had been out for 14 games, yet they'd still, even without Sargent, managed to pick up enough results, tick over enough performances to still, at the start of February, be firmly in contention. To go from that to this, we said on the last week's podcast, is concerning, absolutely. Because as Sam says, and it's right, you know, it should be going the other way. That what are we now, 30, I don't know, four games left, so over 40 games of the season in. 43 games into his debut season in England. We shouldn't be reflecting on what on earth are they trying to do defensively. Look at the goals have leaked today. Look at the players in the box, in and around the six-yard box who were unmarked. Look at the way they were played through midfield areas and down the channels. And that's 43 games in. Fair enough at Oxford on the opening day, the way they were picked off there. You know, that was, you know, mitigating circumstances given how early it was, but not this stage of the season. And also for me, troublingly as well, you know, the catch-all term of Hofball. Are we seeing that now? Are we seeing every game Norwich going out, and even if they don't actually go on to get the result because they're coming up against teams who are able to, maybe at this stage of the cycle, be slightly better, like Burnley, for example, in terms of streetwise and know how to grind out results. But I struggle. I mean, Stoke recently in this run is the only time I've sat there and thought that is akin to what we saw in the September, October best periods of the season in terms of the control, in terms of how Torrop envisages moving the ball from back to front and that chance creation, that almost sense of waves upon waves attacking the opposition penalty box. I don't think we've seen really, certainly over a 90-minute game, we've not seen that at all this turn of the year that I can think of. I mean, there's been pockets of it. So that's a concern as well. You know, that's on the coaches and the coaching team. Why does it feel that the style that he wants to bring and that he was able to implement at times earlier in the season is, by and large, gone?
I think he's chased results too much.
Possibly. Well, to be completely honest, certainly the handbrake almost pivot away from that identity to what we saw at Burnley first half, what we saw Portsmouth away, what we saw West Brom, wasn't it, at home recently, which got them a result, to bear out your point, Connor. You know, that setup at West Brom was so far removed from what Torrop wants, or has told us he wants to implement at Norwich, yet it got him a result. Does that almost then blur his thinking a little bit? You know, I mean, he's reiterated in recent days that you know, those type of performances, that type of identity, are needs must, and very far removed from what he wants to implement. But it externally, it does create the impression of, you know, a little bit of blurred thinking, a little bit of a grey area we've entered into now, and he cannot, you know, whether he dispute that or not, but he cannot be exhibiting a sense that as a coach that he's almost betwixt and between, and he's not quite sure now how to approach the objective of championship progression, game to game, week to week, month to month, season to season. It has to be laser focused internally, but also externally. The fan base need to feel that what was sold to them is what is going to be the success or failure of this project. Because when you start seeing your team perform in the manner and the setup at West Brom and Burnley and Portsmouth earlier in the season, it does, I'm sure, as a fan, lead you to question, well, what is the strategy? You know, is it more, we'll go pragmatically now in the pursuit of results to get themselves up and at the reaches of where they are in the mid-table? Or, you know, is it sticking steadfast and just trying to do what they're trying to do repeatably and far better? And of course, you know, the key to all of this will be, and he said it recently, you know, this summer, getting more grade of player that fits his preferred style of play. And if him and Napa are able to successfully achieve that, that'll be three windows then since they've come together to equip the squad with players who he deems and Napa deems are a better fit to implement his style of football. Then I guess that all feeds into the time to judge him will be next season, ultimately, because, you know, you look at that lineup today and we can all pick out players who, it's not exactly square pegs in round holes, but they don't seem to be comfortable or natural players in a Johannes Hoftorp system. And until we get to the point where, you know, it's his signings, more or less, his and Napa signings in the bulk of those 11 positions, in the starting positions, then, you know, there is always that thought at the back of your head that, you know, well, you can't really judge him because ultimately there's a lot of players he's still inherited, and that sifting process has happened in these two first windows since he came to the club, and there'll be another big turn of the wheel this summer, you expect, in and out. But certainly from next season, you know, I think if we get this inconsistency, almost not only in terms of performance, but in terms of outlook and approach from the head coach, then, you know, I think there will be justifiably the time to be quite critical in terms of the assessment of what is he all about, what success chance has he got to implement what he's trying to do at Norwich, and from there, obviously, you know, there'll be, you know, calls to make, but certainly, you know, at the moment, anything around him and his future is well, it's borderline ridiculous for me. I think it's very premature because, you know, although it has regressed, it's still, as it was packaged at the start, a season where things are going to have to be put in place. It's going to be ups and downs. Sadly, now it's more downs than ups. But if that's what we were told at the start of the season, then, you know, whether you like it or not, it may be back to front for too many people's liking. But that has been what has been delivered from the outset, which is a rather uncomfortable, bumpy journey with too many kinks on the road and too much, seemingly at this stage, left to be unpicked and put back together again in a more cohesive fashion to get them to where he's stated, where Napa stated, where the Attanasios themselves have stated, which is a club who realistically can compete for the Premier League, get into the Premier League and then have a go at actually sustaining themselves in the Premier League. But all of that is for the long, long distant future because there's so much work ahead this summer to build a group of players who have cast in the image of their head coach, which we have to be honest, this group aren't, and they're showing that week in and week out now on a regular basis.
Seems like a good place for a pause. We'll be back in part two, plenty more to get into, so we'll see you back in a second. Welcome back to the Pinkin.com Norwich City podcast, brought to you in association with the guys at First Bus, and we're very grateful for their support. Norwich could have done with one of those in front of their own goal this afternoon to help what was a pretty abject afternoon, a 5-3 defeat to Portsmouth, a victory that has all but secured their championship status. I thought Josh Murphy, we're not going to talk about it any other time, but I thought Josh Murphy was excellent today. It was his first return to Carrow Road. Nice reception for him. And obviously not quite doing what Jacob is doing in the Premier League, but I think it's nice to see him doing well. It'd certainly give Norwich City's wingers a run for the money if he was wearing yellow and green at this moment in time. Let's get back into it then, if we must, and we must, unfortunately. But Sam, I mean, Paddy alluded to it in part one. I'm going to take you back to the 1st of February, where Norwich City had just beaten Watford 1-0 at Vicarage Road. They'd shown a lot of the elements that we're talking about. It was quite dogged, yes. Watford were down to 10 men. And, you know, we were maybe talking about the elements, the intangible elements that Norwich City has shown to get a result over the line. I mean, Marcondes in particular that day was casting a particular role that upset Tom Cleverley. And we remember how that went. But you look at the Championship table. I looked earlier. Norwich were on 42 points, I think. They were 2 points outside the top six. West Brom were on 44. They had a real chance ahead of home games against Derby, against, was it Oxford?
Preston
at that point, sorry, to go and push on. There's a run of 7-8 games, a block that we were looking at, and we think, you know, you could get points from that if you put a real run together. Since that point to where we are now, as Paddy said, it's 2 wins in 13. No Championship team has taken fewer points in that period than Norwich City. Probably a bit of a rhetorical question, really. I don't expect you to know the answer or to answer it, but what on earth happened from that point?
It's a great question. It feels like it was years ago. You know, I won't expose any of the Norwich fans who were texting me saying they've booked their hotel for Wembley, etc. I think at that time I was feeling pretty silly that I'd predicted Norwich to finish as low as 9th in the Championship table.
I was 13th, yeah. So how do you think I was feeling?
You're not looking too well. You might have gone a bit positive now, I think. But yeah, at the time it was it did really feel like they had the opportunity to go and achieve the playoffs. In fact, if you had asked us then, I think probably we would have been somewhere around 50-50 at the time. And yeah, it does just feel like such a wasted opportunity. And you've said this a couple of times before, so I won't take the credit. But it does feel like that failure to hold on to the 1-0 lead against Derby, that mistake from Jack Stacey to give them a penalty late on in the game, probably was the turning point. And I suppose that turning point could have come at any point. It's not necessarily just a case of if they had held on to get the 3 points against Derby, then everything would have been fine after that. But obviously it would have given the home crowd something to savour. I think the Oxford game was pretty quick after that, and they would have been going into that buoyed by, you know, positive memories of that recent win over Derby, and with confidence that Norwich were going to go on and qualify for the playoffs. And yeah, it just does come down to those fine margins. I think it's probably not, when you look at the massive points gap that has now opened up between those places and where Norwich are. You can't say that, you know, it's just down to one or two results, but you do wonder if there are just a couple of tiny decisions that have affected the confidence, and that's where some of these performances have come from. And that's not necessarily an excuse or mitigation for Torup or his players, because ultimately you should probably build a squad and a tactical setup and a group of individuals that's more resilient than losing the lead against Derby and capitulating for the rest of the season. But I think there will be that level of regret there. And for what it's worth, I don't think they would have won the playoffs anyway. I'm not sure as good as the finances probably would have been, they're in a better financial position now anyway, so it might not have been particularly helpful to get the promotion at that time. I know I'm going several steps ahead here, but I think in the long stretch, probably in a year's time, whether it's gone well or not, I don't think in a year's time or 2 years' time, we won't be looking back going, oh, if they had just qualified for the playoffs, you know, in this season, or if they had just held on to that result against Derby, then everything would have been different. I don't think that's necessarily the case. But when you could have set up a situation where even if they had narrowly missed out on the playoff places, I think people would have been going into next season saying it's not far off a good team that can compete for promotion. I think there will be huge frustration at the fact that they just weren't able to convert that opportunity into something tangible in terms of what they would have achieved. Because for all of their faults this season, you'd say those were the sorts of games you'd back them in. There have been quite a lot, especially on the road, where you really don't know what you're going to get. I think even Plymouth, you know, away from home against a team that was, I think, yeah, they were bottom of the Championship table at the time. It wasn't us being wise after the event saying that, you know, it was sort of stereotypical of Norwich. I think a lot of us were talking about that game as a potential banana skin even going into it. So away from home, it hasn't quite been the same. But those sorts of games at home with a bit of momentum, Josh Sargent was fit at the time, which seems to be the most important deciding factor. Yeah, I think when they do these season reviews that they undoubtedly will do behind the scenes, there will be a lot of regret about those few games, because I think although the gap is too big to say that they decided it on its own, I think the way that affected confidence and the way that the team played probably has, unfortunately, decided their season.
Yep, which segues us nicely, because I've got the match day programme from today. I think our colleague Chris Gorham at Radio Norfolk put this to Johannes Hovtorup after the game. I must confess I didn't hear his answer, so I can't speak on that. But Paddy, in Zoe Webber's column, and she does these obviously before every game, and we've spoken about it on a few occasions, but they contain this paragraph, which I think was particularly interesting. And she says, as we approach the end of the season and following recent results, there is a real frustration around the training centre that we've fallen short of our target of the top six this season. Heading into the campaign with some significant changes, we knew this would be a season with challenges along the way. We'll use the summer months to reflect and review the campaign, but before then, the importance of approaching the final games of the season with energy and positivity is of huge importance. Clearly, after the result today, those aren't the emotions that we're talking about. But it's interesting on that line about top six being the target, because there's been a lot of talk this year about transition and moving and moving to something new and changing the squad. Clearly, you know, I know Johannes has spoken about this, and there's been challenges, and there's been injuries, and there's been things you don't account for. There's been bumps in the road, as she suggests. But I mean, Norwich have fallen quite short of that target of the top six. And I would imagine the final league table probably won't look too pretty in terms of that gap. So is that a fair measure? This is my question, I guess. Is that a fair measure to look at this campaign through, or does it need to be a little bit more nuanced than that?
Well, I mean, a lump of clubs in the division could have started the season with a top six target doesn't mean you're realistically going to be able to seal the deal. I mean, there can only be ultimately six teams who succeed in that endeavour, and
four,
to get into the top six.
In terms of the
get into the top six, but
semantics,
but but and obviously within that, you'd imagine, as it's proven, the relegated clubs would lock out three of those spots. So, which isn't to accept that is the situation, but look at the landscape of English football the last few seasons and the clubs who've come down. More often than not, unless you do what Norwich have sadly done in the last season or two, and just
Luton, of course,
But realistically, that you're probably, if you want to fixate on the top six element of it, then you probably, your odds were pretty slim, I think, in the context of, I go back to that fan forum in the Forum in Norwich, hosted by Radio Norfolk, in fact, with Torup. I think was Weber on that panel? Yes. I think she was, Napa was there as well. And I don't recall them, verbalising that top six was the target. Of course, if everything came together and the rate of progress was far less bumpy, and the signings had hit the ground running, or a clump of those new signings had really come and exploded onto the scene, then I think with all the favourable currents at their back, you may have been able to at least take that hunt for the top six down to the stretch. But as the significant challenges probably alludes to, when you're without Josh Sargent for 14 league games, when you've got the Championship top scorer, and you could rightly say, well, that's his own fault, he's out for six games, banned, the Kenny McLean ban, the Angus Gunn ban, there have been some significant challenges to a squad that isn't really got the depth to withstand losing key players and lots of key players at the same time. We won't open a can of worms about fitness management of players and whether there's questions to ask there. That's been debated liberally throughout the season. But I don't read those comments and think that there was a belief based on realistically that they could get into the top six. I think, of course, there's an ambition. If you're Norwich, you have to start every season at this level, on the evidence of what they've done, sort of flip-flopped in the recent years, with an expectation that you should be good enough and have a squad enough good enough to compete for those top six spots. But we've already talked about where we thought the measure was before a ball was kicked, and I think most Norwich fans were in the similar ballpark. So I'm sure internally that was very much the feeling, that really it would have had to have been a very unrealistic maybe season where everything fell for them and new players came in, hit the ground running. Key players stayed clear of injury, suspensions didn't impact as they did. Torup, as we've discussed, adjusted to the demands of the Championship better than he has done, him and his coaching team. That's fair comment. He's the first to admit he hasn't got everything right by a long stretch. And if all of those things have fallen into place, then maybe they sustain a top six push. As we've discussed earlier in this podcast, we discussed it last week, start of February, they're 2 points off. So top six target was realistic. But as has been proven since, this group, this head coach, this coaching team, collectively aren't good enough at this stage. So, I don't take away from those comments that top six was the actual measure of how you rate Yannis Oftorup in his debut season. I think that's pretty unrealistic, really, for me. So, but there's no doubt, and I've sort of spoken to one or two people recently, very recently, in fact, inside that football club, and you will not be hearing the word transition moving into this summer and next season. That is a label which, the connotations of which, nobody at that football club now wants to wrap around this. If this season was about putting building blocks in place, next season, and Torup himself has done some media in the lead up to this game and said the ambition from him next season is that they are in that top six conversation, realistically, not they could maybe gate crash it if everything fell their way. So I think next season for me is you can benchmark the success or failure of the season against top six aspirations, not this season. I don't think that was realistic.
Do you think they've been a bit too ambitious in their communications this season? It just it strikes me a bit that they went into it, and you referenced that that thing at the forum, and there wasn't, as you say, an explicit, I don't think, we want to get into the top six. But Torup did speak about wanting to be one of the, I think somebody asked a question about, you know, there'll be 12 to 16 championship teams who will feel they can get promoted. And Torup was clear to say, we want to be one of those teams. And sometimes I just wonder, with the way that it's gone, I don't think it's gone really any differently to how most of us would have expected it to go. But if you message it at the start of the season and you say maybe more realistically, if you say it is a transition season, if you use that word more often actually at the start of the season, you take the hit in terms of the messaging at that point. And there will be I think the section of people who are angry now at Torup and the way that it's panned out probably would have been angry then if they were hearing transition every 2 seconds and the expectations were being prepared in that way. But now I think the mood would be a bit, that anger would have mellowed out a little bit, and you would have been going into the season where it's more realistic to achieve something with a bit more of a positive mood. I don't know, it might just be me, but I feel like maybe part of the problem around the mood and where it is now is that they maybe were a bit too ambitious in the way that they spoke about it at the start of the season.
Yeah, it's twofold for me. I think there's an element that, and I've said this before, I don't think last season helped them. And I mean that because obviously it gets what they're doing this year gets compared to last season. Yeah. So people will say at the moment, Norwich are 13th. And it's true. You can't argue it. It's factual. They are in a worse position than they were last season. Clearly, those seasons aren't really compatible in terms of different manager, a squad in a different place. That was a year two parachute payment squad that they put a lot of money in. It was the fourth highest wage bill in the championship. It was very different ambitions. There were them ambitions there to go and finish in the top six and to go and try and get promotion. They finished in the playoffs. They were way off it. We saw what happened. And, you know, as Paddy articulated on a podcast when we were at Redwell Brewery, they had to change. They didn't have a choice. They had to. But clearly, then if you finish in the playoffs, there's that expectation, well, why can't you do it again? Why can't you match that? And we're worse this season. Why are we worse this season? And second, I think you are right, because, you know, we dedicated so many hours and moments in this podcast speaking about Stuart Webber over the years, and he was a big figure in recent Norwich City history, so rightly so. But, you know, and there's been a lot of commentary and talk and discourse around what him and Farker did in that first year. I think what all of us could agree on is they got the communication in that regard absolutely right. There's going to be more pain. There's going to be players leaving. There's going to be bumps along the road. We're not going to get everything right. Have they done enough of that this season? I think maybe they haven't. I think that's a fair point. Yeah. You know, and in the end, ironically, it was probably communication that didn't help Stuart Webber, but at the start it was majorly important for setting the blueprint to that road. I mean, Paddy, I mean, I've got the end of that season in front of me here, which, you know, I know people will maybe say it wasn't the case, but it was the case. There were a lot of anti-Daniel Farker sentiment in that first year, and you know, the end of the season, I've got their final eight results in front of me here. 30th of March 2018, 2-0 defeat to Fulham. 2nd of April 2018, a 4-1 defeat away at QPR. They beat Aston Villa on the 7th of April. Drew away at Sunderland 1-1, but that was the Sunderland team that went down, wasn't it? And that was only a late equaliser from Ivo Pinto that rescued that result. They lost 2-0 to Cardiff, who were under Neil Warnock and were very close to getting promoted to the Premier League. They drew 0-0 against Preston. They beat Leeds 2-1, and they lost it, which is obviously Wes Houlihan's swan song. And then they lost it to Sheffield Wednesday 5-1. So he's not Daniel Farker. This isn't 2018, but it's evidence there, because I'm sure a lot of the sentiment, if we went back and scrolled through and found comments, we could probably find a lot that is the case at the moment. And Sam's right, there are a lot of communication points that are very different. But that inconsistency and whatnot, that wasn't defining for him in that sense. And it probably feeds into your point earlier of it just feeling probably a little bit early to come down anything conclusive and to probably measure, as Sam was saying, anything hard and fast based on what they have or haven't done this season.
Yeah, and two things as well, because if you want to continue that parallel moving forward now, rather than looking back and comparing Farker 17-18, what did that summer bring in the transfer window? It brought Timu Pukki, it brought Emi Buendia, didn't
but it? But it also brought James Maddison going, Josh Murphy going, exactly. Nelson Oliveira going. They're three top scorers from the year before.
But clear, and then the sprinkling of players from the Bundesliga too. But by the end of that window, and this is the parallel that is relevant for now, the squad was better. And why do we know that was better? Because look what they did in 18-19. So it was absolutely irrefutable that they, while losing a Madison-level player who was such a dominant presence in that 17-18 season, as bad as it was, they improved the squad overall, the 11 and the depth below it. That's the challenge now going into this summer. The second thing I'd say as well in terms of the Farker thing is, if he hadn't started that season very well, I mean, we all go back to the Ipswich game in the early September. I think they lose that game. He's not in post, mainly because it maybe added Ipswich, East Anglian derby context to it.
Should have lost that day as well.
Should have lost. And that was also the game, I think, Max Aaron's made his full debut, or it certainly came on that day. And but it was, and then I think it was presumably around then, it was that September international break, Timu Pukki switched to the centre of the
Middlesbrough,
forward line, 1-0 yeah. Scruffy win, but a win nevertheless, and Jordan Rhodes came out of the sort of main pivoted spearhead of the attack, and the rest came together. So that tells us what needs to happen moving forward for me, very clearly, you know, both in the window and the start of next season, they have to get more right than wrong, and if they do that, then, and that's not then to carry on and extrapolate and say, well, we're on for an open top bus tour next summer, or rather than players are
on a first,
and the fans of course goes without saying, but nobody can obviously make that claim, but in terms of kicking it on from where it is now, and drawing on what happened with Farker and Weber and that project at this critical juncture of where they were, it just reinforces for me that yes, players will leave. Yes, big players will leave this summer. But what is left when we kick off the start of next season of the Championship has to be a better squad and a better 11. And that will rest solely on what Napper and Torup can do in the window. And then once he has the raw material in place, going back to what we said earlier about more players that he deems a better fit for his system and style of play, then that has to then pull into actually results and performances of a consistent nature that mean in very short order at the start of next season they are actually in the front rank, and you know, by that, you know, you're 10 games, 15 games in, you know, they're in and around that top six. I think that would have to start to be the benchmark, really. So that is quite interesting to see here, those Farker results in 17-18 at this stage, and really it was very similar in terms of a lot of patchiness in results and performance. I do remember the Sheffield Wednesday game, actually. That was the Madison on the crutches job, wasn't
it? And actually, if you think about that team, and it was criticised a lot for being too soft, for conceding too many goals. That Farker's team probably wasn't as attacking in terms of the what we've seen from Torup's team at his best. So there are kind of stylistic similarities in terms of how the style of play evolved as well, just compared to the players. I mean, you have Marco Stiepermann at left back, and there's another element of that. And of course, there's luck as well, which is an element that I think often gets discounted
football. And I'm going back to my point about Jordan Rhodes was signed that summer to be the focal attacking spearhead.
That was a bad bit of recruitment, really.
It wasn't Timu Pukki, but Pukki, I think, got one or two opportunities in those early cup games. I remember a League Cup game he came on and scored, and then got his opportunity down the middle and never looked back. So you could say that's not luck. That's good recruitment in that regard. But the window opportunity, the sliding doors moments, you know, these things will all, going back to what you said earlier, for 18-19, Farker, Weber, all those elements came together. You know, the things that they could control, but maybe also, you know, luck with injuries, luck with suspensions. Maybe the fact that, you know, they were ahead of the curve, they'd got themselves ahead of the curve in terms of a style and style of play in the Championship that not many other teams were attempting, and the players they were using to try and implement that. All of that came together, and you just hope that, you know, what can be controlled under this Torup and Napper project, they get more right than wrong going into this window start of next season, because if not, then really you don't see any discernible improvement from where they are now, which is some good, some bad, some very indifferent stuff, and all of that together leads you to being a mid-table entity in this league.
I would tell you, I don't want to use the word positive because it's not the right word, but I think one thing this end of the season really does do is it brings into perspective for everybody, whether you're inside or outside of that football club, as just what needs to be done this summer and the extent of the work that needs to be done. Whereas if they would have maybe finished 3 points outside the playoffs, 4 points outside the playoffs. You can kind of kid yourself a little bit, can't you? You can say, oh, well, we were close. Maybe it's just minor tweaks and little bits of kind of cosmetic surgery that we need to do rather than perhaps what we now all feel it needs to be, which is something a little bit, not to nick Ralph Rangnick's coat completely, but something a little bit more open heart to that squad and that group of players in terms of recruitment ins and outs, really. But in the short term, Sam, there is a game beautifully. So we're all really looking forward to a nice two away games in succession, but first of which is a trip to Millwall, which, you know, you spoke earlier about the games at Plymouth, and I do think this is a separate point entirely, but in the long term, Norwich do need to shift this time of culture where you're looking at games, particularly away from home, and you're thinking they'll lose that one. And that's what Millwall feels like on Easter Monday, particularly off the back of today, yeah. With everything that we've spoken about in terms of where this group feels like it's at. You look at that game, they've been done at Blackburn today, pretty bad. Was it 4-1 in the end, Pad? Yeah. And you look at that and you look at that game and you think it's the type of one that Norwich lose.
Yeah.
So what happens now if you're Johannes Hovtorp? What are you doing? What are you trying to do?
If I had the answer, then I'd probably be getting paid a lot more and doing a different job. But
okay, what would you like to see?
Yeah, no, that's fair. Sorry, I was being snide. no, I think probably a lot of it will come down to the fitness element of it. And I know people don't want to hear it, and they definitely didn't want to see it at Burnley. But I think with the tight turnaround and the way that Torup spoke about it beforehand, that will come into it, so you'd expect that it's a starting 11 that probably does look a bit different. I hope personally that he goes back to a 4-3-3 because to be honest, it was so fluid it was actually hard to really say today, but it looked to me a bit more like a sort of 4-4-2. Sainz definitely was right up alongside Sargent in a more central role. So given that's what they're going to be doing going forward, I hope it's back to the 4-3-3, and I also think it probably will be similar to what he did at half-time in terms of what he talked about post-match, really, and identifying the players who are going to absolutely give their all, regardless to an extent of what they offer tactically and technically and how well they combat what Millwall do. I think the most important thing is that he plays 11 players who he knows for sure he's not going to be screaming at because they haven't been bothered to run back. They haven't, you know, been irritated with their teammates for not pulling off a pass, or they haven't, you know, they've looked like somebody who isn't really completely committed. So I think that's the sort of 11 he should go for. And based on his comments post-match today, it sounds like the sort of 11 that he will go for. And yeah, I think that's so important. I'm even willing to see a right-footed left back, which is the rarest of things.
Which
for
one?
Me.
Which one? Who? Which right-footed right back are you playing at left back?
I think Fisher. I think the Stacey
playing up front. He's in form at the moment.
Yeah,
2-2.
Yeah, yeah.
Sargent might not be available.
I wrote that in my match report that I thought it was rare enough for them to score two consecutive set pieces. Let alone it's now three set pieces in two games. It's even rarer for Jack Stacey to score in two consecutive games. So maybe that tells you where they are a little bit. But yeah, I think as much as I almost always say, you know, we ham up the importance of trying hard and working for the team and passion and things like that, I think we talk about that so much, and 95% of the time it isn't the issue. But for me right now, the situation that Norwich are in, that's the issue. And I think that's what Torup has to resolve first and foremost going into this Millwall game.
Agreed. And Paddy, just to end the pod, I mean, I don't want to spend too much time on it because we've got three more shows to fill, or two more shows maybe. Yeah, two. And we're doing a live one as well, which you can find the details. That was a nice segue that I hadn't planned. But we are doing a live podcast, 1st of May, in the Liner Castle at Carrow Road. If you watch us on YouTube or you listen to us from an audio perspective, get down there. I should have all the details to hand. Sam's going to get them up now because I don't have them. So we can give them to you after Paddy's answered my next point. But we'd like to see many of you down there. We're hoping, Paddy, to have a couple of very special guests who do know what they're talking about. Is that fair to say?
Definitely know more than we do when it comes to Norwich City, that's for sure. Yeah, no, it looked promises to be a bit musical, not us on any musical instruments, I hasten to add, but as Sam will allude or reveal, musical entertainment as well. So let's have a cathartic night, putting the world to rights, and where Norwich go to be on that open top bus in my first bus this time next year.
Yes, and that is with the Norwich City Fan Social Club. So we'll come back to those guys at the moment who do brilliant work. But Paddy, the final point I wanted to make to you just to close out the pod, and like I say, we're going to have a lot of time to get into the weeds of this and properly discuss it. But it feels increasingly, and I say this because of what I think we're going to see in the next week in terms of some of this movement begin, it feels like they are going to have to get out of the traps pretty quickly in terms of the summer. And we're talking about, obviously, those players who are out of contract. We're talking about Jacob Wright, Lewis Dobbin, potentially, even as well. It would be helpful for Norwich City to get out of the traps pretty quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're right. I mean, this coming week now, I think there will be that clarity in terms of the out of contracts. I think we probably know how the wind's blowing on that one. But you know, that will sink. That for me, that's almost the first piece of business of the summer, in that regard. That it's a very clear line in the sand. That'll, by definition, open up holes that you know they will need to replace within the squad, within the 11, and allied to those names you've already referenced. Wright, Dobbin, certainly Wright. It seems like that's one they'd like to press the button on very early on in the window. We know there's a deal in place. We know all parties seemingly are on the same page. So, yeah, absolutely. They do need to get off to a fast start, I think. Because I think the reality is, if you take Sargent as a case study, I think that has saga written all over it. And not from anything, from his perspective, to draw a negative parallel with Eder or the Rowe, even Kamara situations. I just think the nature of his contractual status, that Norwich have a lot of power in that dynamic, and you know where the interest will come from, and will it be at the level that Norwich would actually conceivably, you know, decide it's time to cash in on him. So I think there will be elements that aren't in their control that will maybe overlap with the start of next season, because as we know, the transfer window doesn't close before the start of the season. So in that context, particularly inward business, off the back of what's going to be, you know, an announcement about out of contracts, then yeah, I think the sooner they can get things moving, the sooner, because barring some improbable turn of events, I don't think they're going to engender or inject that degree of optimism on the pitch in his final three games, sadly. So if it's not going to come on the pitch, it needs to come off it, and the next opportunity for them will be, you know, a real signal that this is what we're about, and this summer will be even more evidence of that, that fans can row in behind and see the grade of player and the type of player and know that, okay, they've recruited these type of players. Therefore, I think we're pretty confident what Yannis Torup's going to try and deliver next season.
Yes, and what I will say heading on to Monday, and clearly that's going to be a full away end, hopefully, and the players and the coaching team and Ben Napa have subsidised that. You know, these fans, I know you wrote this in your pointers, they've been to Burnley, Plymouth, Bristol, seen Norwich lose all three of them. You just honestly hope they get to see something on Monday, and then obviously a nice trip to Middlesbrough to conclude the season. Sam, for those who are still listening, 1 hour and 6 minutes into the podcast, and hopefully that is the vast majority of people. Yeah. I'm sure we'll do plenty more in the lead up to this in terms of social and stuff. If you missed the details, we'll write them down elsewhere. But Sam's going to do his best salesman pitch. I mean, tell us a little bit about this live event that we're doing that's coming up.
Yeah, well, this has to be the dream audience, right? If you've made it this far to the end.
These are the diehards.
You're much more likely to spend your hard-earned money to come see us.
It's for charity, but, as well, isn't it?
Well, there you go. Exactly. It's not about us. It's about the charity. And it's only £5 of your hard-earned money as well. So what's that compared to a Norwich City ticket? Best not to get
don't
into competition.
That, yeah,
But yeah, so it looks now like I've never seen this before, and I'm just because I got it up, but just so I don't get anything wrong. Yeah, it's in the Lion and Castle on Thursday, the 1st of May. Doors open at 6, starts at 6:30. All of us doing our lovely podcast. And yeah, hopefully some guests as well. Also live music from Sons of Mark. I think we've had them on the podcast before. Obviously not, they haven't been here, but we've played their music on the on the podcast before. So there you go, a bit of a recreation of that. A raffle for the Community Sports Foundation as well.
Some good prizes I've heard as well.
Yeah,
some very good prizes.
Signed
player items, all your good stuff.
There you go, exciting stuff. So come along for that. Food as well, and a licensed bar, as you'd imagine, in a pub. And bingo, which is...
Do you like bingo, Pat?
Bingo. I didn't know there was bingo on. I like a bit.
So excited.
Like a bit of bingo. No, I won't tell. Yeah, well, I mean, that was on holiday. I don't know when it... last 5-10 years, and stumbled into a bit of a game of bingo, and... the announcer came out. I'm not going to sing the song, but he had them all chanting. As you can imagine, there was a wide demographic in terms of age range. And it was all about get your dabbers out, which apparently is the pen that you actually dot the numbers on.
You've got to be careful going around saying stuff.
I know,
like
yeah,
that,
yeah. Then. So I might have to give it a bit of get your dabbers out.
I've never House. Have you ever played bingo properly? I've never
No,
played.
Well, the closest I've got, so I went on a family holiday when I was about 8 or 9 to Wales. It wasn't a very good holiday, actually. Not for the how it panned out, but we all ended up quite unwell, but that's by the by. But all of my sort of lasting memory beyond the unwellness is the fact that they played bingo every night, and there was this sort of quite fierce oldish woman who sort of ran it, very Welsh, and every night people used to walk into the hall and just randomly shout bingo at various points, which used to cause great unrest to the overall game of bingo. So that's my memory. But this game of bingo will be much better structured and, who knows, you could be playing against Paddy Davitt, which would be a beautiful way to end the season. So there we go. That seems like a nice place to leave the pod. Hopefully see as many of you guys there as possible. It would be great to see you. As I say, we're going to have some excellent guests. Hopefully they will be revealed in very short order of a Norwich City persuasion. So we'll see how that goes, and hopefully it's a good night for everyone, and obviously raising lots of money for charity as well. Thank you very much for watching. Thank you very much for listening. We'll obviously be at the Den on Easter Monday. We'll be in Middlesbrough as well. 3 more to go, folks. Let's all get through this together, and then we can look forward to maybe look forward to the wrong term, but there will be a summer of change to come on the horizon. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, gents, as well. Thank you to First Bus. We'll see you soon.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.